This episode of the Organic BC Podcast was funded by the BC Ministry of Agriculture and Food through the Sustainable Canada Agricultural Partnership. This is the Organic BC Podcast, and I'm your host, Jordan Marr. In this episode, a conversation with Marcelo Moretti.
Hello, my name is Marcelo Moretti. I'm associate professor with the Department of Horticulture here in Oregon State University. I'm responsible for research and extension in weed management in perennial horticulture crops. Among the ones that I'm most active would be hazelnuts, hops, blueberries, Christmas trees, cranberries.
I approached Marcelo for an interview because of his ongoing research on the use of electricity in weed management. Specifically, Marcelo has been conducting trials in various perennial crops like hazelnuts and blueberries using a tractor-pulled implement that kills weeds by sending a current into their roots via their foliage. I had read that Marcelo is a couple of years into this research and that the results so far are promising, so I reached out to ask him to tell us about it. You're about to hear that conversation, and then, after that, I'll be back to introduce a testimonial from a farmer who has tried out this equipment. So here's my conversation with Marcelo. I'll talk to you in a bit. Marcelo Moretti, thank you so much for joining me on the Organic BC Podcast.
My pleasure.
So I've invited you on to talk about your experience with using electricity for weeding purposes with some new tools that have emerged on the market. And I guess my first question is, I've read past interviews with you indicating that this technology has been around for a long time, like going back to the late 19th century or early 20th. Why are we giving electric weedings serious consideration now?
Well, you are correct. I think we have a patent in the U.S. from the late 1800s. And then in the 50s, maybe 60s, we saw some commercial activity from a company in Midwest. I think it was called Lasco Lightning. And there were some papers back then. But that coincided with what I call the golden age of herbicides. So a lot of herbicides coming in. New technology was getting cheaper and cheaper. So there was no reason why to look into that. I think there was a change, more recently, a change in interest. We're looking for what we call sustainable practices, non-chemical practices. And then not in the organic system, but in the conventional agriculture, a lot of herbicide resistance. And a few years ago, we're talking about cancer with glyphosate. And all those things came together almost all at once. At least looking back, looks like all at once. And then there were innovations in electricity. I cannot tell you what, because I'm not the engineer, the electrical engineer. But at one point in time, I see three, maybe four companies coming into the market and having this new technology coming in. One is Zesso, is the one I'm working with. There's one in the UK. I think they're called RootWave. There's one in Germany called CropZone, which is for more large areas. There's one in Washington that I'm working with. It's called Lizzie Global. They have a different approach as well. They're actually more focused on killing nematodes in the soil. And it's very interesting because we're not talking about theoretical applications. We're talking about it's on the market and you can buy. Most places in Europe, definitely you can buy. Some places in the U.S. you can buy. In South America, I'm aware that they are on the market. So part of my research is to be developing alternatives that you can do right now for weed management in those crops. So I work with growers. I go to farms with my equipment, with my technology and test it. So this gives me the opportunity to do so in large scale commercial settings and present to growers. This is very interesting.
Okay, so I want to go back to something you said earlier, because, I think with this equipment, these weeding innovations, you can almost make separate use cases for organic production systems and what we generally call conventional production systems, right? Like I assume it's a somewhat more an easier or more straightforward use case in organic production systems, because organic farmers, certified organic ones anyway, have more or less don't have access to herbicides to control weeds, with a few exceptions, right? But then you talked about the change in interest from those using herbicides compared to, say, the 1950s. Mm-hmm. And I want to expand on that a little bit. We're going to talk about how these new tools compete with herbicides on cost. We'll do that in a few minutes. But I did want to ask you, I'm curious to know from your perspective as a weed specialist, when we talk about herbicide resistance, how serious a problem is that? And I know that's a very general question and you probably only work in with specific weeds, but like how much of a problem has this become? And therefore, how much does that feed into this desire to be looking at alternatives?
The herbicide resistance, it's a very important to an extremely important issue depending on the cropping system. So if you go to something like cotton, where they were very reliant, in southern U.S., very reliant on herbicides, then the herbicides are not working. Then you have to go and use hand weeding. You're out of the market because you cannot compete cost-wise. You compare it to markets like in China, where labor is a lot cheaper. You just have to change cropping systems. In other crops, like the perennial crops I have in here, it's important, but less so. It becomes more important because of the cost, but not something that will just kill my crop and I have nothing else to do, because we still have mowing. In some cases, we have the tillage. Where I see the electric being very attractive is that I'm not relying on tillage to do effective weed control, because tillage has its drawbacks as well. That's part of the reason why the herbicides took off. The electric weed control allows you to do no-till, no chemical weed control, and is very, very effective against some perennial weeds, which we'll probably get into that later in the conversation, because the electricity moves through the foliage into the roots, and that's how you will kill perennial weeds. For organic growers, it's always about the perennial weeds. It's our field bind weeds, our Canada thistle, Himalayan blackberry here in Oregon, not sure in Canada, but nutsedge. The perennial ones, the only way you can do something about it is if you can affect the root system, which tillage is one way, but then you have a crop in between with perennial crops, becomes hard. So electricity, in my view, is probably the best tool we have right now. There is a lot to improve, but looking at how little we have invested research-wise on that and how much benefit we already have, I see a huge potential, upward potential to improve it.
Okay. So, and I approached you, Marcelo, specifically because of a research project you're engaged in conjunction or in partnership, I think, with UC Davis and Cornell, if I'm not mistaken. Those details aren't that important, but for this project, you are specifically looking at a piece of machinery from a company based in Brazil and Switzerland called Zasso. And so I really want to quickly, if we could just dwell on this briefly, why Zasso? Why did you zero in on that piece, that company's equipment to test out in these perennial systems?
Well, as I said earlier, my position is very on applied research. At the time I started that in 2019, they were the only one commercially available that I knew of. So I reached out, I went to visit them and say, hey, we need to bring this to the US. Why is it not here? A little bit of the holdbacks where the company was not large enough to spread across the globe that fast. So they were in South America, they were in Europe. Now they're coming to the US. That was one of the things. Two was, I think, regulatory aspects. They were not confident that they would meet whatever were the requirements in the US. So they started where they were more comfortable. So that's the reason why I went after Zasso. But I have no personal preferences, because I've been actively reaching out to different companies. See, hence the one in a startup company in Washington. Because I see as my role as a facilitator to bring unbiased information to the market and say, as a grower, you call me and I say, I'll tell you what are the goods and bads. But I have no commercial interest on that. My only interest is to change the way we're doing things for the better, which I believe the electricity will help us move that direction.
Okay, so Marcelo, for a moment, can you pretend that I'm a farmer that you're trying to convince to engage?
Well,
you're
a farmer.
Well, sorry. Yes, but I don't grow perennial crops. So I want you to pretend I'm a farmer down in Oregon, and you're hoping that I will trial and participate in your research. And the first thing you need to do is explain to me this tool from Zasso. Can you give me that quick rundown of how does it work and what is it like? Is it a standalone unit? Does it attach to my tractor? Like just give me those basics of this tool that you've been trialing.
So Jordan, this equipment that I'm going to bring to your farm to test, this is something that's connected to a tractor The specific unit I have, I would require you to have a tractor that has at least 75 horsepower in your PTO. That's because there is a generator that requires that kind of power to generate about 220 volts and 30 amps. But the problem is low voltage, 220 volts, is not enough to move the energy through the weed foliage. So we connect that to a transformer that will increase my voltage anywhere from 3,500 to 12,000 volts, depending on how we set up. And I'm going to be delivering the energy to the weed foliage using electrodes that are mounted, in my case, in the front of the tractor. So I'm able to treat 4 feet at a time, always touching the ground. And that's very important because when you're operating in high voltage, we don't want to have this energy without a continuous connection with the soil. Otherwise, you see arching of energy, and electricity will follow the pathway of least resistance, and that could be a person standing by or some other machine. But by contacting the soil and the weed foliage, we're much safer than that. And the things I'm looking at is to see what are the effects of electricity, either both in the weeds species, weed composition of the soil of your field, and also what it's doing to the soil. Right now, I'm just scratching the surface on that. So I'm looking to what kind of organisms are being affected by that, just soil respiration and composition of some of those microbes. But eventually, we would like to dive into more on the genetics to give a more specific answer on like which populations are going up and down. And as we know, as I told you, we are always contacting the soil. Your soil type, your soil conditions, your soil moisture will affect my performance. So this is something we're testing. We're looking to applications of electricity at different times of the year and see when you can do it, when you cannot do it. I can tell you here in Oregon, in a week like this, that's raining every day for the last 6 weeks, and the forecast is another 6 weeks of rain. This is not the time you do it, so we cannot do so. But as we move into late winter, early spring, where the rain becomes less continuous, we're learning when it's feasible to do that application. Very much like tillage. You know, you cannot do tillage year-round. Your soil condition has to be appropriate to do so. If it's too dry or too wet, it's not going to work. There is like a window of optimum for you to do tillage. Electricity is somewhat similar.
Okay, so let's get back to the physical characteristics of the tool for just a moment, though. Yes. I want listeners to picture going through a perennial system like an orchard, say, and they just picture their mower or their tillage equipment that is on a swing arm. That is in, you know, so the tillage equipment is in contact with the ground, or the mower is just above, obviously, but it's that swing arm that allows you to get right under the canopy. And then when it hits the stem or trunk or whatever you're talking about, the swing arm pushes it back out and around, correct? And then there's apparatus coming off of that arm that is in contact with the foliage in the ground. The tool is sending, I think you said, starting at 3,000 volts of electricity through essentially a closed circuit, correct? So it contacts the foliage, it goes straight down into the roots where it does its best work and kills some of these, all of these weeds, both annuals and perennials, at the roots, but then returns essentially back in a closed circuit back into the machine, correct?
Correct. Yeah. It closes the circuit, and the soil is part of it, the soil and the weeds. And that point you made is very important, because to close the circuit, the energy will have to go through soil and weeds, and the number of weeds and the size of the weeds will affect that circuit. The more weeds you have and the bigger they are, more resistance you have. So you're going to lose more energy. Mm-hmm. So how do you overcome that? You increase your voltage. So the voltage is the potential of energy moving. If we were talking about like a pressure washer system, it's basically increasing the pressure of your pressure washer would clean up your sidewalk better than a lower pressure.
Yeah.
By increasing the voltage, I can push my energy, my current through that system, even though it's harder to do so.
And then presumably, though, the trade-off is that it costs more. Is that one way to think about it? Because you're converting fuel to electricity. So is it right to say that if I'm dealing, there are certain soil conditions and weed conditions where it would cost less to do a pass, and certain where it would cost more?
Yes, you are correct. Because every time I'm working under high voltage, I'm exerting more stress on the equipment. So sometimes if the voltage is too high, we cannot just sustain the work for too long. My generator starts to heat up, it's cooled by oil. If it's operating under high temperature, the oil will expand, starts leaking, then you need to shut down. Other times, my limiting factor is the size of my tractor. I would require to be working with high voltage, but then the engine cannot keep up with it. So the ways we can do it is reduce the contact area. So you raise a little bit your applicator. So the apparatus is basically, I call metal fingers. They are the electrodes. They will have less of a surface area touching the weeds. So you can cope with this situation where you wouldn't be able otherwise. The best thing we are learning now is that if the weeds are too big, it's actually better for you to mow it and let a new flush of foliage come up and then you treat. Mm-hmm. Or in ideal condition, you get when the weeds are small. But then it goes back to that problem. If it's too wet, you can just not do it. Mm-hmm. Because the soil is so saturated with water that will conduce that electricity. So it's a balance between resistance and conductivity. You know, high resistance, everything is too big, it's hard for you to push energy. But if the soil is too much moisture, you have a very low resistance, so you're losing energy to the soil. So the best way I had to explain that is with an analogy. Think about the voltage as the pressure, and you have a pipe where you want to move water, and then the current of water is my current of electricity. So if the pipe is just too small and you want to put high pressure, eventually your pump cannot keep up. Mm-hmm. So this small pipe is my resistance on the system. You don't want to have a resistance too high, otherwise you cannot keep the current flowing. Mm-hmm. Conversely, if your pipe is broken, you cannot reach out the pressure because you can crank the pump as much as you want, but the water would just flush out and not continue on the system. So that's my balance of low resistance. So it cannot be too high, it cannot be too low. It has to be within a certain range to get the work done. And talking about the equipment, the higher the voltage I can operate, the easier the energy moves to the plant. So in other words, I can move faster because I need less energy. So the equipment itself is not going to change, but the speed of operation will change. And when we were doing that work, I don't quite have the amplitude to test it completely, but when we were doing under high voltage, I could cue weeds like Italian ryegrass, which is the biggest problem we have in here, at about 2-3 kilometers. But under low voltage, I would have to slow it down to go about 1 kilometer, 1.5.
Okay, so in your summary, you've been bumping up against cost. So let's just talk about that. Yes. Now, can you talk about, and look, we're talking in generalities, or you can go as specific as you like, but no one listening is going to hold you to specific numbers, right? You're just doing your best to give us a sense of things, a ballpark. So I'd like to start briefly, if you can, just with like what one of these tools costs to put on your 75 or above horsepower tractor. And then we'll talk about operating costs.
So just equipment, when I purchased it a few years ago, it was about $50,000. It has changed drastically from that for two reasons. One is inflation, as I think everyone has experienced that. And two, they're coming with a new version of it that's no longer using my alternate current. It's actually a direct current. So because it's a new version, the price will change drastically. That will need to go along with about a 80-90 horsepower tractor. So you have the 75 horsepower and the PTO. So that tractor will cost you, what, $80,000 to $100,000. So combine those two, we're talking about close to $150,000 investment with this older technology.
Well, sorry, but I will stop you. I mean, presumably a lot of, especially larger farms, would already have the appropriate tractor, just to be clear.
Yes, you probably have the appropriate tractor, but I'm not certain if you're going to need one more tractor dedicated to that.
Right.
So you
okay.
Treat your whole farm. So I'm giving you the worst case scenario.
Okay.
If you need to buy a tractor and equipment,
yeah,
I'm talking about $150,000 investment. If you already have the tractor, it's not as bad. Mm-hmm. The things I will give you are the worst case scenario. So I'm assuming you're buying the tractor. I'm assuming you're only using for that, which is not true in most cases. But it only gets better from there. So if you want to encourage adoption, I'll give you the worst case scenario, and you're going to find that the grass is actually greener than it told you so. So the best way to look at it is how much it would cost you to run that equipment. There's no consumable other than the fueling on your tractor. And I've been using this equipment for quite some time. Even the electrodes, yeah, they oxidize a little bit, but they don't get too bad. So nothing is being replaced too often, unlike a pesticide that you need to buy so much product per acre treated. So the best way to look at it, this is somewhat equivalent to a mower operation-wise. You are always using your tractor at that rotation where your PTO is delivering that whatever rotations per minute, I forgot right now. And the speed of operation will be anywhere from 1 kilometer an hour to maybe 4 kilometers an hour or five, depending on your weeds. So your cost per hour, you can calculate, last time I've done it, a 90 horsepower tractor with labor and so would cost me about $90 or $110 an hour, depending how much your operator is making, depending on your fuel. Then it all boils down to how fast you move to the field, how many passes you need to do. And that's where some of the limitations currently exist. I can only treat 1.2 meters, 4 feet wide, 1.2 meters at a time because of my tractor requirement. So if you consider you want to do a broadcast application, treating every square inch or square meter of your acre, that's going to cost you a lot because you're only covering 4 feet. Mm-hmm. But in perennial crops, we're planting hazelnuts at a 20 feet, that's like 6 meter apart. Mm-hmm. And the hardest part for me to control the weeds are right underneath the trees. The same thing for blueberries. So if I'm only treating that portion of the field, so 1.2 meters each side, about 2.4 meters every 6 meters, I'm treating what, a third of the field, maybe 40% of the field. So that cost I told you, I'm not going to be driving every square meter. So the cost will reduce proportionally. Last time I calculated this was about $60 per acre treating these 30 to 40% band, assuming you do one pass.
And that's including the labor? You're working in the labor?
Yes, yes.
Right. Okay, very interesting.
So it's very comparable to some of the practices we do, like herbicide-wise, when you're just banding that application in there. And I'm talking about conventional herbicides. If you compare that to organic herbicides, they're much more costly. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure we are more cost competitive.
Yeah.
And here comes the other part that is a bit harder to calculate, but I'm thinking about it for a while. If you use something like mowing, since you're organic, let's talk about mowing.
Sure.
It will last 2 weeks, mm-hmm. maybe 3-4 weeks down the road, you have a hard time telling if you mow those weeds or not because they just regroup. Well, electricity doesn't work that way because I move down the roots and I literally kill the plants. I've seen cases where 6 weeks later, nothing was regrowing, provided that we have dry summers. If you're irrigating, you have new flushes of weeds, something else will germinate. So it lasts a long time. How many times you need to do that in a year? Not positive yet. We've been doing that with that field with organic blueberries. And we did 6 times last year. And sometimes I did it just so I would expose the soil to the electricity and see what it does to soil respiration. But we didn't have weeds. Nothing regrew. And I was irrigating those blueberries with a drip line. So it tells me it will get cheaper over time because the weeds are not regrowing. And if you do a proper work with weed control, you don't have seeds being produced.
Right.
So your pressure of weeds will reduce. So it's very difficult for me to tell you precisely how much it's going to cost because I don't know how many times you need to do in a year. It may be a reducing effect.
It brings up a related question that I wanted to ask you, which was, I was in doing my research for this interview, I was trying to wrap my head around, like, to what extent this tool represents, whether you talk about an organic or a conventional system, represents a replacement for other techniques and tools or something that is used in conjunction. And I know there's no easy, straightforward answer, but it sounds like in a best case scenario or medium case scenario, this can be a replacement. But it also sounds like there's other contexts where it's kind of, you're bringing it in as one of a few weed control measures.
So the current version, the biggest bottleneck I see is that I cannot treat a larger area. Let's say you want to kill everything because you have organic hazelnuts and the nuts will drop in the ground and you're going to pick from the ground. So you need everything clean at that time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not cost effective for you to treat your whole orchard. So mowing will come into play to be either a complement or as an alternative.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I do think that this will replace mowing in the situations where you don't want the weeds to grow. Because if something like a cover crop that you just want to reduce its size so you improve airflow, but you don't really want to kill it like a permanent sod between your blueberry fields, then electricity may not be perfect because it will really either kill it or stunt it for a while. But at the same time, a grower asked me, well, what if I go a bit faster that I'm stunting that cover crop, but not killing it, then I don't have to mow it as many times, which is kind of suppressing growth with electricity, modulating growth with electricity. I think it can be done. I haven't delved into that too deeply. I've been toying with that idea. So if that's true, I suspect electricity will replace some practice like mowing.
Marcelo, this is just how these things go. We're dwelling on a lot of the potential barriers, trade-offs of this stuff, etc. I promise you and the listeners that we're then going to talk about the positive stuff, like the best use cases for this. So that's coming in a minute or two, but I do have a couple more questions about some of the trade-offs we might have to embrace as we consider this technology. So it seems in my research that it is promising that when you talked about soil respiration, but I'm thinking more like biological life in the soil, we don't necessarily see the electricity impacting that biology. I'll get you to qualify that. But at the same time, one thing we didn't address before is just any risk or potential for the electricity to actually hurt the crop. We haven't even talked about that. So maybe you could address both of those at once.
So I'll get the second part, which is easier. Can electricity affect the crop? Yes. Yes, it can. So in blueberries, the young blueberries that we had, I cannot get too close because I have those basal shoots growing. And those will eventually replace my older shoots, my older branches, because they will be bearing fruit. If I touch with electricity any tender tissue like that, it's gone. And that could be very detrimental for the longevity of the bush, because you need a proper architecture to have high yielding. On other cases, we're doing it in cherries. And it was a mature cherry, so it's very hard to document any impact because it's not really growing a lot that I can measure. The yield wasn't that great this year because of pollination. But what we saw at the end of last year was a faster leaf drop in the plants that I treated with high energy. To me, this is an indication of stress. Think about any year that you have like super drought, super hot, all the leaves drop way faster. And I'm talking not just agriculture, I'm talking about...
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. In the environment, because the plants are stressed. So I'm now gearing up to watch out how they leaf out to make sure we're not seeing anything. Maybe it was just coincidence, but I'm preparing for the worst. And now going back to what it does to the soil, can electricity affect the soil microorganisms? Yes. And I have a different project we didn't talk about, which I'm using electricity to basically replace methyl bromide, which is a soil fumigant that will kill nematodes, disease, weeds, and everything. So if you go with electricity high enough of an energy, you can cook the soil. I could warm up the soil to temperatures way above my target until I learn that I need to dial back. However, when we're targeting the weed foliage, the amount of energy I'm applying is a fraction of what I told you that I can use to heat up the soil. So within that range, which I, if I'm not mistaken, we're talking about a few kilojoules per meter square, like 6 to 10 kilojoules. Don't hold me on that number because I'm not too versed on electricity units yet. Then we don't see any effects on soil respiration and organisms. But I haven't got to the point that I'm doing the genetics to see, hey, soil respiration is the same, but I'm talking about, are these the same species that are there, or I killed some and the other ones are thriving just because there is like opportunistic room to grow?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know it yet, but I'm less concerned about it. And there are some research that came out from different places, and they are always going back to that. Like, we're not detecting anything meaningful with this amount of energy. So it tells me that it's okay. What we are doing, we are monitoring nutrient levels and growth in the crop with the idea, like, if I'm killing all the soil and I don't have the respiration, I don't have any synergy that any organism could do to blueberries or hazelnuts or cherries, maybe I'm going to see less growth, lower nutrient content, and like a decline over time. We've been doing that in hazelnuts for 3 years. So far, it's good. We're going to do it for another 3 years. After 6 years, probably be enough for me to say we're not seeing it. It probably doesn't happen.
Right. And then, so back to the question of, does it harm the crop? It sounds to me like it kind of answers another question I had, which is, why are blueberries a good test case? Because you mentioned those tender shoots that are coming up. Compare that to a cherry tree or a mature hazelnut tree. I guess the idea is that those trees are just not conducting electricity anywhere near as effectively as some of these weeds that we're after.
So in the hazelnuts, because the hazelnuts have those basal growths, the suckers,
yeah,
I actually apply to the suckers, and the suckers, because they get woody really fast, nothing happens to them.
Uh-huh.
And I saw the same thing with woody weeds like Himalayan blackberry. Wood is actually a good insulator for energy. So if the energy doesn't move, you're not heating the tissue, you're not killing the tissue. But in blueberries, because they don't get as lignified as woody to as fast, we just avoid touching it altogether early on. Maybe as they grow older, I'll be able to do it certain times of the year when they're dormant, like right now, or later in the summer when the new shoots that are very important to me will grow to the point that I'm not just wiping it out. But what you said is right on to the point. Like, if the energy doesn't move down the roots, then you're not killing the roots and you're not killing the plant. And perhaps that's how the trees can tolerate electricity.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you just one more concern or potential trade-off, and then we're going to just get into more like results so far and the promise of this technology. And that's just about safety. I'm thinking of potential risk to the operator, since we're dealing with high voltages. And also I saw a reference to the potential that in like a really hot summer, you know, do you have conditions where you could accidentally start a fire? So are these big concerns or not so much?
The fire, yes, it's a big concern. So I would not recommend you using it in an environment where you have dry material, dry plants that will basically serve as fuel. So depending on the cropping systems, like grapes, always in the hills, always with more vegetation, because these are more tolerant crop, the chances of you starting a wildfire are huge here in Oregon or California. So just don't do it at that time of the year. Stay in the late winter, early spring, and that's it. In other crops like hazelnuts or even blueberries, we just don't have that fuel around.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not seeing any problems. We did it this past summer in 2023, which was very dry, less rainfall we had in May, and then it resuming almost October, and we didn't have any fires concern. So it all depends on how your field is. The suggestion I give to some of the growers is, let's prepare the field so you can use that technology. You know, the same way if you're doing mowing, you don't leave wires in the field because you know it's going to entangle from mower. So if you have a lot of dry leaf material, don't use it at that time. Maybe you till it under, let the new growth come in, and then we use it. Now, switching back to the safety of the operators. Yes, this is a very big concern, primarily because we are not used to work around high voltage. You know, there is people that do that, and they are working for the power lines. And it can be done safely, but it requires proper training and equipment. So the things I'm seeing with the new versions of equipment that really tells me we are going towards the right pathway is that they're trying to isolate the tractor from the equipment as much as possible. So the applicators are staying with the machine behind, and perhaps they use some materials connect to the tractor. They're not conductive because the tractor is entirely made of metal. If you have a trailer that's made of metal, and then the whole thing is closing the circuit between the tractor, by the time you get out of the cabin, maybe you touch something and then you close the circuit. In my case, since I have an older version, what I tell my technicians and students is, anytime this thing is running, you don't get any closer than 3 meters. You always keep in visual communication, light of sight, line of sight with the operator, And then if they give you an okay, which the machine is off, now there's no energy anymore, then we get closer. In a day-to-day operation, I would say never leave your cabin with your power takeoff running because your equipment is energized. And then you don't know where the energy is closing the circuit. But I feel like we need a lot more guidelines to make sure the things are properly done, because perhaps there's a lot more than I don't know where we could potentially close the circuit with the equipment and the tractor. So how to avoid that? My unit, right now I use these high voltage cables going next to the cabin into the front of the tractor, which for operational cases is a lot better for you to have the applicators in front of you so you can adjust the height, adjust the width. But I really don't like seeing those cables next to my driver. So if you have a cabin-less tractor, I would say don't do it. Because throughout the day, you're going to lower your guard and put your hand where you shouldn't, and who knows where the energy is going for. So how to solve that? Well, make sure everything is behind you or together with the equipment and not touching your tractor.
So we've been talking for quite a while, and I said this before, it's natural that we're going to say, well, what about this? What about safety? What about, you know, damaging the crop? What about, it could easily give the impression so far that this is just not a promising tool. So I want to ask you, does this tool show promise for adoption? And if so, name a couple of contexts where it shows the most promise.
Yes, it does show promise for adoption. I would say Zasu is the one that's leading the pack here in the U.S. because now they have 3 commercial units, one in Washington, one in Oregon, one in California, where they're doing demonstrations. And I think you can buy it from local distributors. Where I suspect the biggest change will happen is a company will buy some of those units and provide a service. Just because now your investment required as a grower will be much smaller because you're just paying for a service to see if it works. And then you don't need to learn all those things we're talking about because somebody that owns the machine will provide you the service for weed control. And then through that, I think the adoption will increase. I don't know anyone specifically doing that here in the US, but that's what Zasu told me. It's happening in Europe and South America, like those service providers. Other than Zasu, in the UK, I'm seeing a lot of activity from RootWave. I think they are on the market. They have those commercial units. I don't know if they delivered that yet, but based on the older technology that they had some handheld units for you to control weeds in natural areas. It was always this service model where somebody owns the machine and comes to your place and does it for you. Just because we get more specialized, you know, it's risky to jump into something you don't fully understand. Mm-hmm. But farm machinery can be deadly if you don't use it properly. And that I'm talking about across the board, we see accidents. So there is a learning curve, and perhaps 10 years from now, we're going to see, it wasn't a big deal.
Okay. And so, and which crops show the most promise so far?
I suspect that the perennial crops would be the best one for the reasons we were discussing before. There's not enough energy for you to treat large areas just yet. And it's much more cost effective if you're just targeting specific sites within your field. Mm-hmm. But that being said, CropZone, which is the one based in Germany, they're coming with a proposition that you use it is in large areas to kill your cover crop before you plant your cash crop.
Right. So another go at no-till, like low-till.
Yeah. And maybe I'm wrong. I'm biased towards perennial crops because that's what I do. Mm-hmm. So let's rephrase it to organics. Just because there is like a high ceiling for potential investment because the return is usually higher. So I suspect, and the need is higher, right? You don't have the synthetic herbicides to buy your time. You need something that's effective now. So maybe the organics will be the ones leading the charge and adopting it more and more.
So let me jump over really briefly to RootWave, that company in the UK, because in my research, I noticed they have essentially a handheld unit. You can have it on essentially on your back or on a wheelbarrow. What it had me thinking about, because the tools you're describing and most of this conversation are for, you know, not necessarily large farms, but certainly larger than the small scale context that I farm in, right? And I just want to quickly relate that, you know, I've had a lease on 5 acres for a good number of years now. And when I first signed the lease, like after I'd signed the lease, I was kind of heartbroken. I was a mixed veggie grower at the time, kind of heartbroken to discover after the lease was signed that I had about 6 serious patches of bindweed that I hadn't seen when I toured the farm. And I'm an organic farmer. Dealing with bindweed is awful, especially in vegetables. It really seems to me that electricity, like, you know, so in this case, the use case for a handheld unit where I don't have bindweed across my whole acreage, I have these isolated patches where they've gotten going. I may some promise there to be able to, in context like that, go and deal with a problem before it gets worse. And to be honest, it got worse. I mean, in the years that I farmed with my tillage, I've now got a much worse bindweed problem there that I contributed to. So I thought mm-hmm. I would mention that because just, you know, we're talking about over large acreages, but then also in this, in terms of spot weeding, it seems like a tool like that shows promise.
Yeah, Rootwave has that unit. I know Zesso has something similar. And they are coming. They also have units for smaller tractors, just so you know. So I have a prototype here that I've been trying that only requires 20 horsepower, but I'm treating a smaller area. What they are indicating to me is that their future goal is to have more like those backpack units where you charge the batteries and you walk around and just treat. And perhaps something that's mounted either in an ATV or a small vehicle that you go and target specific weeds at the time where they're most sensitive. But there is a much more low investment technology that the first time I became aware of it, it was when I saw the University of New Mexico, where Eric Lenhoff and others were developing a way where you use a solar panel to energize basically a metal screen. And that would be static, mostly with the intent of you killing weeds in landscape areas next to houses. And I've been trying that with the idea that if you don't have enough acreage to justify having a tractor and therefore an electric weeder, maybe the solar panel approach where you're treating a small section of your area where the weeds are at a time would be effective.
That would be a good application in the context I just described, where I just have these small patches developing to put a screen over that and walk away and it sits for however long. That would be interesting to consider.
So we did it, and it was very, during the summer, because it was hot and dry, it was very effective in killing horse tail, equisetum, which is somehow sensitive to electricity. But when we did it for long term, then the irrigation on the field next door starting to affect our efficacy. So eventually collapsed, and now we need to restart that trial. But the point I brought it up is just to say electricity, this is one way to apply electricity that I'm telling you. There are many, many possibilities that we were not even aware. Sometimes you don't want to kill the plant, but lower levels of energy may have effect in other organisms, either positive or negative. I'm not even looking to that at this point because as a weed scientist, what I do, I kill plants, right? So I'm trying to kill everything. But I see a lot of promises in different ways that we can apply electricity, some of which I'm not even aware of. As soon as we get more familiar, I'm certain growers will start experimenting and say, hey, well, what about this way? Like this simple way of using a solar panel for a yard, for a garden, I think is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Most of the time when I talk about it, people want to do it in their home, their backyard. I have this patch with Canada thistle. It's a nightmare. If I just leave it there for 3 months, what would it do? I said, mm-hmm. I think it would help you.
So interesting. Well, look, Marcelo, our time is very short, so I'm going to officially thank you for giving your time over to tell us about this this promising tech. Thank you for joining us. I know my listeners are going to find this really interesting.
Well, my pleasure. Anytime.
So that was my conversation with Oregon State University weed specialist Marcelo Moretti. When I listened back to our conversation, I regretted that I didn't ask him for some more specific commentary on the potential for the Zesso electric weeder to be useful to blueberry growers. Given that BC has so much blueberry production, and given that compared to fruit and nut trees, blueberry bushes are presumably more susceptible to damage from the electric current involved. So, I emailed Marcelo to ask him for a quick summary.
He replied that he has observed promising results in blueberry fields so far. He's recorded good weed control and hasn't observed any significant damage to the crop or to soil health. He speculates that an electric weeder like the one from Zaso could be used close enough to the blueberry plants that growers could reduce the surface area under plastic or fabric, which could make it easier to incorporate amendments and manage irrigation lines. His research is not complete, though. Check out this episode's show notes for links to his work if you want to keep track of what he's doing. Now, before we got off the phone, I asked Marcelo if he could connect me to a farmer who has seen this tool in action. He suggested I talk to a distributor for the tool based in Washington, and that distributor connected me to a farmer who has hosted a demonstration of the tool at one of his farm sites. So I called him up. Our connection wasn't great, but here's a summary of what he had to say.
Yeah, my name is Keith Masoka. I'm a farmer in Washington State. We've got a farm management company we manage for institutional investors and have some property of our own. We grow apples, cherries, and pears. Been doing that for a number of years now. Yeah, first learned about the Zaso weeder probably about 18 months ago, roughly. I'd seen a YouTube video, and then it kind of showed up in person in the state this year and got some firsthand experience on a couple of our ranches where we did some demos and trials just to try to understand the technology and see how it worked. You can see when it goes through and passes over the weeds or the grass that it kills it or electrifies it. And that trend continues over the next couple of days. And yeah, it knocks it back. It's pretty cool what it does. We try to maintain that weed strip so we get adequate nutrition into the trees and not pay to grow cover crop under there necessarily. So it's not just proven very effective on all types of weeds that we've noticed. It's had really good effect. When you're growing organically, you just have very few weapons to combat weeds and a lot of wonder weeders or some of those things. There's some like citrus-based products for a burn back, but it's a constant struggle. Anyone who grows organic understands, and it would just be a tool that would allow them to help control that without using chemicals. I think even conventionally, as we look at some of the other products, as they become banned or a little bit harder to use, this might be an option as well, just to cut back on pesticide use in general.
Right, and so far, like, what are any major limitations that you've seen with this tool?
None yet. I think just learning. Does it work better with a little bit of moisture in the soil? I think this might be interesting. So you've got to have some method to control that. But that would just come with learning over time. Thus far, it seems very simple to use. It's definitely not an inexpensive tool, which is where I think it would need to be utilized over a large number of acres. But the benefit there maybe is the reduction in your pesticide costs and program. Worker safety benefits, some of those things be kind of interesting to explore.
A sincere thank you to Keith Vaselka for making some time on a busy morning down in Washington, and to Marcelo Moretti for telling us about his research. That's the end of this episode of the Organic BC Podcast, which was produced with funding from the BC Ministry of Agriculture and Food through the Sustainable Canada Agricultural Partnership. Check out the show notes for this episode for more information about Marcelo Moretti's research on electric weeders. And I hope to be back with another episode soon. Opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and guests, and not necessarily those of the Government of Canada or the BC Ministry of Agriculture and Food. The Government of Canada, the BC Ministry of Agriculture and Food, and their directors, agents, employees, or contractors will not be liable for any claims, damages, or losses of any kind whatsoever arising out of the use of or reliance upon this information. The intro and outro music for this episode was created by Matt Eckel. Thanks, Matt.